You're listening to Messenger Insight, a news and information program brought to you by the Baptist Messenger and the Baptist General Convention of Oklahoma.
Hello and welcome to this edition of Messenger Insight. I'm Brian Hobbs, your host. Any Baptist Messenger reader who's familiar with our blog, wordslingersok.com, would have seen the writings of Caleb Moore. And Caleb serves as teaching pastor at Catoosa First. He's been a church planter here in the state. And he now joins us in this episode of Messenger Insight. Hey, Caleb.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Well, thank you. I was very interested to see the other week, actually in the month of March, you appeared on a podcast program, only this wasn't just any podcast program. It was The Thinking Atheist. And this is a leading atheistic podcast program. And I thought we could just talk about that and some of those conversations. How did the show appearance even come about?
Well, his brother actually goes to our church, and we were talking about family, and he said his brother was an atheist. And I said, you know, I have some experience with that. And then he told me that he happened to be a professional atheist, where he made a living doing a podcast. So I actually asked if he would come on mine, and I have a podcast where I interview different people. And I wanted to just have a conversation, maybe hear about some of the story, what made him change. Wasn't necessarily looking for debates, and he invited me on his as well. Maybe we would do like a joint podcast. And he was for the idea that we would just have a casual conversation, but that casual conversation quickly turned into a defense of the faith, which is one reason why Christians always need to be ready. And so we just went with it. It ended up going 2 hours long, so it was quite the discussion.
Wow. You know, and listening to you all dialogue, and the gentleman is, I believe, Seth Andrews. And
correct.
The show is The Thinking Atheist. And then your podcast, is it Dog Backwards?
Dog Backwards. Uh-huh.
Yes, I love that. It fascinated me that the topic right away, Abraham and Isaac, you know, we think of that biblical account. You talked about the problem of pain and some of the things C.S. Lewis has written about. What were some big issues you grappled with just as you dialogued and then discussed and then maybe even a little debate?
Well, the interesting thing in these kind of conversations, there's a reason why moderated debates are very helpful, because it keeps it focused on one subject. We had agreed we weren't really going to have one specific topic that we went on, and I was just looking more for a conversation about how to have better dialogue. And it very quickly fell into a very typical atheist approach, which is I'm going to name 100 things that I don't like about the Bible, and I want you to defend them all as fast as possible. And if you miss one, then that, from their vantage point, seems to give leverage to their case. And so right off the bat, it was, how can you have faith? Faith is essentially the lack of knowledge, and it's blind and ignorant. And so I led into a discussion about Abraham, who's the father of faith, but his faith was never blind. He always moved one step at a time based upon what God had done in the past.
Yes,
and the New Testament makes that argument. And he wasn't very happy with that because it didn't go with his definition of what he considered faith to be. So then he moved right into the discussion, well, God's for child murder, and he used the story of Abraham and Isaac. And that's one of my favorite stories. I think it's a fascinating picture of God entering into time and space and using the language of culture to show why he's different than other gods.
That was a powerful part of the discussion. And then I think one of the aspects, you know, and this is often brought up by people who are skeptical or questioning or out-and-out atheists, is the problem of pain or suffering. Could you talk about that in that discussion point?
Well, the problem of pain is only a problem for Christians. It shouldn't be a problem for atheists, because in atheism, the world is headed towards extinction anyway. The sun's eventually going to burn out, animals come and go, and humans are just a blip on the screen. So there's no way for them to say that this pain is wrong. To them, that's just what happens in this universe. We look at evil and suffering, and we can call evil for what it is because we have a standard of morality. If there's no standard of morality, how can we look at anything and call it evil or wrong, or say some pain is unjustifiable? In atheism, pain isn't justifiable or unjustifiable. It just is. The universe just simply doesn't care.
Great point. Caleb, a minute ago you mentioned that you had had some experience with apologetics or atheists. Could you, for those that may not be familiar with your story, could you briefly unpack parts of what you mean by that with your encounters with atheism and then vis-a-vis where God has you now?
Sure. I was hoping to get to a little bit more of my testimony in the podcast with Seth. I got to tell a little bit of the beginning because I used to say I was an atheist. I claimed atheism as a worldview for a while. I would say that publicly, but then I look back in my journals and I talk about God an awful lot, which is kind of what we see with atheists today. They say they don't believe in God, but it's interesting how mad people can believe in a God or how mad they can be at a God they say they don't believe in. But I went through this journey of trying to figure out what was real. There was all the knowledge that was available to me at the time. And knowledge never, you know, it doesn't matter if you present the evidence. God has to work in a person's heart, and God worked in my heart. But there were certain barriers. There were certain things I didn't understand. And I felt like when I was growing up, the only answer Christians could give was, oh, you just have to have more faith. That wasn't cutting it for me for a long period of time. I really wanted to know. Some of the same questions that maybe Seth asked, I asked myself. And it turned out there is this very vigorous and thriving area of apologetics where people have been answering these questions like C.S. Lewis used to do. He dealt with these questions in an intellectually honest way. And so once I discovered that realm, I just jumped in and I loved apologetics ever since.
That's excellent. And it's amazing how God's given you skill in conversation. Sometimes we can, as Christians, have the knowledge, or if we delve into apologetics and get equipped, how can we avoid becoming argumentative or mean-spirited? How can we maintain a winsome posture as we equip ourselves, Caleb?
For me, it's never about trying to win the argument. I could have done, and I was a little disappointed in the way the debate went, because it kind of went to what is very typical in atheism today. It's almost a caricature. It's like they're all doing these Richard Dawkins, Christopher Hitchens impressions where they come at you and they want to be extremely offensive and be like, well, you believe in a child murderer, slave-promoting, monstrous God. And so they go for the shock value. So the first thing you can do is just not be shocked. Lost people act like lost people. We should never be surprised at their behavior. What I want to do is not react to their attitude, but do my best to react to the arguments. Now, I can put out the better argument, and it's the thing is I don't have a college degree, so it's not as though apologetics is only for those that are well-studied. Apologetics is extremely easy as a Christian, and the reason is because if you're right, it's much easier to defend being right than it is trying to defend something that's not true. So God has made himself so obvious, not just through nature, but through Scripture and the work of the Spirit, and just the fact that we can use reason and logic and morality, all these things are dependent upon the God of the Bible. So if you get into these kind of conversations, it's very easy to get nervous and flustered and frustrated. I always tell people, don't be afraid to say, hey, I don't know the answer to that right now, but can I come back to you? The best thing you can do is just be calm, cool, collected. Listen to what they're saying. Sometimes you have to get past the emotion and hear what kind of argument they're trying to make and just point out, hey, I see some inconsistencies in this argument. What you're saying doesn't seem to hold water, and here's why I think that.
Thank you for sharing that. Is there something we could keep in mind, like if a person is an out-and-out atheist going for shock value, or someone that just practically is not actively believing in God, they have some lingering doubts, they may or may not be questioning, would the approaches look different depending on where the person is coming from, is what I'm asking?
Absolutely. You're not going to run into atheists on the street very often like Seth Andrews. He represents kind of the keyboard warrior YouTube atheist. This is how he makes a living. He's got an audience. They have a certain expectation of what they want to hear, and he delivers on that. When you meet somebody who might be an atheist on the street, they're going to be much more gentle and try to hear your side a little bit more. So I think people truly are, I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt that they want to believe. People want to believe in something. atheism is extremely depressing. It means love is not real. Murder is not truly evil. It's all just a social construct. And what atheists today, like Sam Harris, have taken to the logical conclusion is what's called determinism, which means that you really have no free will. So according to atheism, there's no real beauty in the world. You're just programmed by your DNA to live and love and act how you do. So when people begin to understand that, atheism becomes really unattractive. So I believe people are truly searching. They might have some questions. They might have heard some of the atheist rhetoric and found it convincing. So we might have to do a little research. It's okay to go to Google and look up some, there's all sorts of answers to the questions they might have, but just take your time and walk with them.
Great reminder. Caleb, what are some books that have been important to you as you've gone about your study and being equipped?
There's a couple. One that is very easy for people to get into is a book called Choosing Your Faith. I could tell you who wrote it if you hadn't asked me, but it's Choosing Your Faith, and it kind of goes through how we make decisions on this subject, and it points at all the different ways that we could go, but why Christianity is the most logical way to go. It deals with some baseline apologetics, enough for you to have a conversation with any atheist you would interact with. If you want to go a little bit deeper, there's a book on what's called Presuppositional Apologetics by Greg Bahnsen. And Greg Bahnsen is no longer with us, but he is a hero of the faith. And he took over the work of an old church apologist by the name of Cornelius Van Til. And Presuppositional Apologetics is the easiest thing for every Christian to grasp. If you like, I could give you a really brief example, and your listeners would be able to grasp it within 2 minutes.
Yes.
So when somebody says that there is no God, I always go to the example of math. An atheist believes that only the natural world exists. I just ask them, how much does the number 2 weigh? Well, of course, the number 2 doesn't weigh anything. It doesn't exist in time and space. It is this immaterial, unchanging, universal constant. Math is the same tomorrow as it was today. It's the same in China as it is in the United States. So no matter where you go, it's there. It's not something we just discovered, because if we just, invented, because if we invented it, people would have come up with different forms of mathematic formula. What math shows is that there are things in this world that are immaterial, unchanging, universal, and constant. Well, atheism can't account for those things because all they believe is the natural world. Another one is logic and reason. So anytime an atheist engages in a logical conversation, they're appealing to things that are, by definition, supernatural. This is why I said in the debate, an atheist has to sit on the lap of God to slap him in the face. So anytime I'm engaging with an atheist and I ask them, would you like me to engage reasonably? And they say yes, by default, I have won the debate because I've proven that they believe in supernatural things. And it's very easy to connect that to the story of Jesus Christ.
That's good. That's a good example. Thank you for pointing that out. Here we are having this conversation around Easter time, and of course we think of the Savior of the world, Jesus Christ, lived the perfect life, died on the cross, rose again. As a hallmark of the central truths of Christian faith, if someone were trying to master some key fundamental building blocks toward apologetics, toward dialoguing people with doubts, what would be the most important areas to cling to get to early in conversations, Caleb?
It's all about Jesus.
Yes.
And in all of these conversations, we try to get to Jesus as soon as possible. We know historically that he existed. So if people are looking for a place to zero in on, I say begin to study the reliability of the gospel. Every false religion, including atheism, the first thing they have to do is dismantle the New Testament. So if you want a place to zero and focus in on, just study the reliability. And Dr. James White of Alpha and Omega Ministries has tons of YouTube videos on the reliability of the New Testament. Just watch 2 or 3 of those, and you'll catch enough that you can defend Scripture. Because then we get to talk about the historical Jesus and why his believers were so fervent, so excited about the resurrection, and why it changed the very course of history.
Outstanding. We're coming toward the end of our time here, and I wanted to shift the attention to the local church. Of course, you serve in the local church, pastoring, you've been ministering. What are some ways pastors or church leaders could better equip their people to be grounded in their beliefs? And I'm thinking in particular, you know, you have sons, you have kids. This Generation Z coming up in a world awash of postmodernism, maybe. What are some ways the church can be better at preparing our people?
Well, I'm optimistic, but we're also in serious trouble. We've had generations of preachers who do not equip the people in their congregation for any kind of apologetics. For the most part, if a Muslim or an atheist or even a Jehovah's Witness comes to the door, we haven't given them any tools. We've kind of been regurgitating the same topic, seeker-sensitive, baseline-level biblical teaching for 30 years now. And so people don't have that solid structure that we used to have. So apologetics is a regular part of my teaching on a Sunday morning. And I think every pastor should be encouraged to do that. It can be scary, but I really encourage them to bring in apologetics into their church. And you'll find it opens people up to all the questions they've been wanting to ask but have been afraid to. And all these questions do, they just help us get to know God better. We should never be afraid of asking questions. So a pastor can create an environment where questions are allowed, and I believe that helps people grow in their apologetics and just their understanding of who God is.
I like that. So in addition to the teaching times and preaching times, are you seeing fruit from what's been called the Nicodemus conversation? Someone's truly struggling in an area and they're seeking out and they want to have this side conversation. Are you seeing some of that in your work, in your world?
I see mostly the fruit of that in young college-aged Christians.
Okay.
Who are kind of on the fence. I used to engage in atheists a lot more, but when I just saw almost no fruit come from that, I began to see that these same questions are being asked by people who are truly searching. The atheists that we tend to interact with, especially online, aren't really concerned with truth. They're kind of like atheistic televangelists. They're just shouting stuff for attention, right? But it has no substance behind it. But there are people who are asking those questions, and they might be young, high school men, college-aged men. So in high school and college areas, those who are new believers, I find this stuff to be just bears great fruit.
Excellent. And in my own personal walk, God awakened my interest to apologetics. Right about the time I would be heading off to a large university with a secular presence. So I've experienced that as well. I'm glad you said that. We've been talking to Caleb Moore, who serves as teaching pastor at Catoosa First here in Oklahoma. Check out his blogs at wordslingersok.com. Caleb, thanks for all your writings, your teaching, your preaching, your leading, and just the way you're pouring your life into advancing the gospel.
Thank you guys for providing a platform for me to be able to do that. I'm very indebted to you, and I thank you very much.
Well, God bless you, brother.
God bless you, too.
You have been listening to Messenger Insight, brought to you by the Cooperative Program and the Baptist General Convention of Oklahoma. For more, find us in the iTunes Store or visit us at baptistmessenger.com.